Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning, I'm Samantha Matsumoto, in for Angela Davis. You're listening to NPR News. Award season is in full swing, and this morning, NPR's Cube critics are taking over the mic here at NPR News with Angela Davis. We're going to share our takes on the movies that we think you need to see, and the ones that we think you can skip. So my regular job is that I'm a producer for this show, working behind the scenes, but I also work part-time reviewing movies for NPR's Cube critics. So every Friday, I talk about movies and TV on All Things Considered with my Cube critics co-host, Aaron Moldisalassi. And Aaron is in the studio with me today to talk all about movies. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, Sam. How are you?
I'm good. We're also joined today by Ewan Kerr. Ewan is an editor at NPR News, and he is the original Cube Critics co-host.
One of the original Cube Critics co-hosts,
and now he produces and edits the show. So, Ewan, thank you for everything you do,
and thank you
for being here.
My pleasure.
So throughout this conversation, we want you, our listeners, to share your thoughts with us. So tell us, what is your favorite movie of the past year? Has it gotten recognition from award shows, or has it been snubbed? The phone lines are open. Call us at 651-227-6000 or at 800-242-2828. So Ewan and Aaron, we know that the nominations for the Academy Awards were announced last week. And I want to start by asking both of you, we're all people who love movies and pop culture and TV and just all of it. So how do you feel about award shows as just a movie fan? Do they actually matter to you? Ewan, I'll start with you.
Oh, you've touched an open wound there. I actually have been very disdainful of award shows in the past because there's a certain amount of It's manufactured. This is really a part of the publicity machine for Hollywood. This is another chance to get a whole bunch of people back in the theaters. However, it has to be said that in this extraordinarily divided society that we live in nowadays, talking about movies is one of the few safe areas. This is something that you can literally walk up to someone in the bus, at the bus stop, or you can, at the water cooler or whatever, and you can talk about, well, did you see such and such? I really liked it. And it's fine. It's fine. This may be an overstatement, but I feel it's kind of the one glue that pulls us together as human beings in the modern world, at least in this part of the world. Mm. So, as Aaron said, and I no doubt he will. We were talking about this before. Does anybody really remember? I mean, what do we remember from last year's Oscars? We remember the Slack. But do we remember anything about the movies?
You're definitely right. Yeah.
I do remember Coda won Best Picture last year, and I was really excited. But we were actually just talking about this before the show started I feel like last year's Best Picture nominees in particular, I liked them, but none of them super stuck with me. Mm. Where I feel very different about this year, I feel like this year there are a lot of movies that I really, really loved and I'm really excited about, and then a lot of movies that I really didn't like. Aaron, what do you feel about award shows? Like, do you watch them regularly? How does it influence the way you think about movies and art?
I don't watch them religiously. I do enjoy them, though. I like following the news the day afterwards, mainly because it condenses it down very well. I agree with you, Ewan. Talking about film is maybe one of the safest pieces of small talk left that you can that we can all enjoy. And these award shows like give us an opportunity to do that relatively quickly and simply. But I honestly think that these like that the relevancy of these award shows wanes every year in terms of like connecting people with like the glitz and glamour of Hollywood. I think we lose that every year, mainly because of social media. It's easier to see the glitz and glamour every day as opposed to only a few times a year, which is why I think these award shows were originally so spectacular. Mm-hmm. Although I will say, I think these award shows do a good job of highlighting the value of film outside of a commercial lens. And that's, I think that's really valuable, especially for those who are working within the industry. Obviously, the Academy is like biased in several ways, but it's consistently elevated smaller, more nuanced stories that aren't going to get a lot of box office attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also, like the two of you, have really mixed feelings about award shows. Like when I was a child, I used to watch the Oscars every single year with my mom. And I remember we would like dress up and like literally like we would pull out the best dresses we had and dress up and have like this full night of it. And so I remember just kind of being like captivated by the magic of movies and Hollywood. And then as I got older, kind of realizing a lot of the politics that goes on behind the scenes, starting to kind of notice, you know, like all of these like actors and directors and people who are honored, a lot of them, like they don't look like me. They don't have lives like mine. They're, as we know, very like the Oscars are very, very white and tend to skew very like male when they're with who they're honoring. So I feel like I have all of these really mixed feelings, but I'm still someone who at heart is kind of caught by the magic of it. So I still watch it every year. I know that last year the viewership was the second lowest it's ever been. So, you know, I know that things are changing. Who knows how many people are going to tune in this year? But let's talk a little bit about some of the best picture.
The other thing, of course, which we haven't really touched upon is the world has changed for movies. And the fact is that there are a lot of, we'll talk about it. There's a lot of titles on this list that many people will never have heard of.
Oh, yes.
And they are, that's true every year. But this year, I think it's particularly true. And part of that is because of the new streaming world.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are not going to the movies as much as they did. And part of that is the pandemic. But the it is very much a different world, as you can tell by some of the movies that are on the
list. Let's talk about some of those movies. So I want to talk about the Best Picture nominees and some of the movies that stood out to us. And Ewan, what are the ones that stand out to you when you look at this slate of nominees?
Well, I mean, I actually see three things, in fact. First of all, this list, we got All Quiet on the Western Front, we got Avatar, Way of Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, we got Elvis, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. The list goes up 10. It's a lot of movies there.
Yeah, lots of things to watch.
But this is, I think, for the first time, as far as I can remember, there is a list that has something for everyone. And the fact that Avatar and Top Gun were both nominated for Best Picture, I mean, in the old days, popular movies like that just didn't get on the list. There was snobbishness. I mean, yeah. We're not going to do that. But there's a little bit for everything. There's arty movies. There's the popular movies. There's here's a real shock. There's a couple of movies that are not in English. Wow. You've got a lot of nostalgia. You got a lot of action, and you've also got a lot of movies that kind of mix all that up. I mean, Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. It is so hard to actually really say what genre that movie is because it is everything all at once.
Yeah, I think that when I look at the slate of Best Picture nominees, I think, you know, this is the statement that I think the Academy wants to make is that the movies are back. All of these movies are big in different ways. Aaron and I talk about on Cube Critics pretty regularly about how we've seen just so many big sprawling movies this year, lots of movies that are really long or have a lot of packed things packed into it, like Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I think I've heard you use the term overstuffed.
Overstuffed, yeah. A lot of overstuffed movies for better and for worse. And I think, you know, each of these movies, I think, says something kind of different about the Academy wanting to say, this is what movies look like in 2023. It's been a rough few years, but this is what we want to put forward as saying movies are back, like Top Gun, which brought a lot of people back into theaters, Avatar, The Way of Water, which is this big spectacle, Everything Everywhere All at Once, which I think is probably one of the best examples of that big overstuffed movie and how to do it right.
Honestly, I think this also speaks to what you commented on declining viewership numbers, the fact that there are so many films of like varying genres and levels kind of seems like an attempt from the Academy to try to get more people to watch
and specifically to get them into theaters.
Yeah, definitely. I think watching the Academy Awards previously seemed something to be like a little bit of a pretentious affair, but like now it seems to be a little bit more of the people, if I'm allowed to say it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely something that like allows more people to enjoy and have a reason to tune in.
Yeah.
One other thing which I think is worth exploring is that many of these titles or the stories in these movies are about struggles of the soul, struggles of mental health, struggles of people with trauma.
Isolation, I think, was a big one that stood out to me.
And there's a way that there's a continuity there, which I don't think I've seen in the titles before, because so many of these movies deal with people going through just huge internal turmoil and the consequences of them.
Mm-hmm. So the movie that has the most nominations is Everything Everywhere All at Once. All three of us have seen this movie and have talked about it so much. And I really love it. I know, Aaron, you really love it as well. So this movie has gotten acting and directing and Best Picture nominations from several award shows, including the Golden Globes, the Screen Actors Guild, and the Critics' Choice Awards. Ewan, what do you think of this movie?
Well, I mean, it's basically a story about a family running a laundromat, isn't it?
It's
but like
that and everything else.
No, it is extraordinary how this movie takes in the idea of alternate universes and this wonderful woman who is trying to save her family's business and the way she gets sucked into this. Basically, she's going to save the universe.
Yeah.
And this is the best superhero movie of the year, hands down.
I think I definitely agree with you, Ewan. This is a movie about a woman saving the universe. But I think this, more importantly, this is a story about a mother saving her daughter. Mm. And if in doing that, she saves her own universe of her family. I like the both of you. I absolutely adored this movie. I think this was just a once in a generation story that was as imaginative as it was heartfelt. I think this is going to be a film that people talk about for decades to come, partially because it's fantastic. It blends genres incredibly, but mainly because it's a sincere piece of representation that we're not used to seeing.
Yes.
I had a conversation in a bar about this film, Ewan, mm-hmm. About how this might be like Chinese kids in the future are going to be talking about this film the same way like Black kids talk about like Boys in the Hood or Do the Right Thing. I think this is a piece of representation that just makes you, I can't say for certain, but makes a lot of people feel absolutely seen.
Oh, I can definitely say for me, it made me feel incredibly seen. I had never or so rarely seen a movie about an Asian family where people got to feel so human and messy. And I love that this movie, a lot of it is in Chinese. It touches on queer Asian identity. It's so specific, but also so universal. Like when I went home to visit my family over the holidays, my family is Japanese American. My cousins and I were all talking about this movie and just like, wow, we really see ourselves in this movie, even though, you know, we have all very different experiences. This movie really, really meant a lot to us. And so I do have to say it means a lot to me personally to see it get all this recognition, because I haven't ever really felt like my stories got to look like that or sound like that or resonate with people like that. So it's a movie that I feel like just a lot of big feelings about.
I have talked to a couple of people. I mean, I love the movie. This is, I hate to say this is my favorite because, as you know, usually the last movie I saw is usually my favorite. But I've talked to people. This has just been too much for them because there is just so much flying out of the screen at you.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. I mean, it's wonderfully, wonderfully intense, but it may be over the threshold for some people.
Speaking of movies that we just saw, Aaron, I know that just last night, I believe, you watched The Banshees of Inisherin. This is one of my favorite movies that I've seen recently, too. For people who aren't familiar with it, give us like a little synopsis of what it's about.
Oh, my simplest synopsis is it's the story of two friends, and one of the friends just doesn't want to be friends anymore. And putting it as plainly as possible that way, I think does future viewers a lot of favors in that this movie has a lot happening in it, while at the same time, the pacing is done so incredibly that you are both shocked and not at all surprised at everything that happens. It's very, very funny in a strange way, I think that we can all agree. And it gives a viewer a sense of melancholy that I think that they can enjoy.
Yeah, I think the thing that really stood out to me when I watched this movie is it's about community, but it's also really about isolation. This movie takes place on this remote fictional island off of the coast of Ireland during the Irish Civil War after the Easter Uprising of, I'm blanking on the year, 1916, I believe. It's about isolation, and you and you just mentioned the kind of like thread of mental health throughout the nominees this year, and that really struck with me. Where I was like, wow, I feel like so many of us are struggling with isolation and what it means to be part of community and what it means to be in a relationship with other people right now. So I think that this movie explores that in a really interesting way. That's also very entertaining and hilarious and strange.
Mm-hmm. It does really reflect the, I've spent a lot of time on islands, admittedly Scottish islands as opposed to Irish islands, but the communities there are different and things, very quiet people can suddenly do things which are quite extreme, as happens in this. But it's also, I mean, the one of the two central characters is a fiddler playing beautiful Irish music, and the how creative people can become even as they are in this very ossified community. And of course, this is the latest film from Martin McDonagh, who made In Bruges and Three Billboards Outside. I can never remember the town, Missouri.
Missouri, yes.
Yeah. who is a playwright who has explored similar themes in all of his work. Mm. And it is usually very, very funny, and you feel really awful for having laughed at some of the things. But you can't look away. You really can't look away.
Yeah. So throughout this conversation, we want you, our listeners, to join in as well. Tell us, as we're talking about movies and award shows, what is your favorite movie of the past year? Has it gotten recognition from award shows and critics, or has it been snubbed? The phone lines are open. Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. So Ewan and Aaron, I know that two movies that both of you loved were snubbed this year at the Academy Awards, pretty high profile snubs. Aaron, your favorite movie from last year was Nope.
Yeah.
And there were no
no
big nominations for this, which was really shocking to me.
I am still surprised. Like Nope, like I still think that Nope was the best film of 2022. I ended up watching that movie three times because I enjoyed it so much. I remember describing it on Cube Critics as Jaws in space. It's incredible. Like, it's just everything that you want from a suspenseful alien film. Jordan Peele does an incredible job. I don't want to use the word subverting because I feel like that's something that people say a lot with him, but he definitely like plays with the genre in an incredible way. And we get some really great performances. Honestly, I think like the best performance I've ever seen out of Kiki Palmer.
Oh, amazing.
And she's been working for years. So like just seeing her like this was incredible. Daniel Kaluuya. Thank you. Also did an incredible job as well as Steven Yeun. I think I'm so shocked and like
yeah, obviously this is still like very fresh and emotional. Yeah, and I completely agree. I loved Nope. And you know, it's interesting. It's a movie about Hollywood spectacle, and it's a movie about the people who make the movies that are forgotten by the industry. That's
exactly
the story of the two siblings played by Kiki Palmer and Daniel Kaluuya in this movie. Is that I believe their grandfather, great grandfather, was one of the first motion pictures ever.
He was literally the first, yeah.
And just kind of forgotten by the industry. So it feels you know, a little on the nose that this movie has gotten just so snubbed by the Oscars that message.
Listeners, you can't see it, but I'm like throwing my hands in the air. I'm doing my Seinfeld voice, like, I can't believe it. Like, I'm just literally shocked that no one from the Academy was like, hey, like, you know, this incredible, like, horror, like, semi horror film that, you know, from the guy that we gave, that we like completely fell in love with Get Out. Let's just ignore this film. It's an insane idea that this conversation could have happened, but that's what it feels like happened with Nope.
The other one of the other really high profile snubs is for a movie that I know that you really loved, The Woman King.
Yeah. And this is the story set in the 1800s of an all women fighting unit, which is the elite force protecting the nation of Dahomey in the 1800s, and Viola Davis plays the general who runs this unit with an iron fist. It's really, really remarkable. And it's a story about gender. It's a story about what was happening during when the slave trade was occurring, and the choices that various communities were making. And it's both an action thriller and a real thought-provoking piece about a little bit of history that perhaps a lot of people don't know about. And Viola Davis she's magnetic. Not that she has been magnetic many times before,
yeah,
but is really remarkable. And here she is in this action star role, and it's pulls it off magnificently. So, it was kind of strange that we didn't hear more about that.
Yeah. So last February, NPR host Angela Davis talked with two movie critics about some of the politics and behind-the-scenes lobbying that shapes which films get nominated and go on to win and which get snubbed. So she talked with Sonia Rao, a pop culture reporter for The Washington Post, and Chris Hewitt, the theater and film critic for The Star Tribune. So this is what they had to say about some of the politics behind the Academy Awards and what influences those snubs.
I mean, we can't talk about this without talking about Harvey Weinstein. I mean, that was his huge thing with the Oscars is, you know, with Miramax back in the day, Weinstein was extremely aggressive in these campaigns. You know, the money that was funneled into the Oscars campaign, all of that, which is why so many winners ended up thanking him in a speech. You know, the Academy has responded to that somewhat in the past. They did kind of implement different rules of behind the scenes, you know, what you can do, what you can't do, in order to at least try to make it a little more fair. But at the end of the day, yeah, I think, you know, the Oscars are a big marketing tool for studios. So I think I tend to think of the Oscars as two separate things. I think of the telecast as one thing, and I think of the actual award and what its industry implications are as a second thing. And I think, you know, the behind the scenes is, yeah, it's not always the prettiest thing. I think there is a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that is fueled by money and who has it. But then you look at, you know, smaller films like Coda, for example. It was picked up by Apple, which is a big company, of course. But that's not necessarily the size of a movie we have always seen on winning this many awards and ending up in this place at the Oscars. So I think it's gradually changing a little bit.
I'm intrigued by that. I mean, on the one hand, you know, the winners have not necessarily been the people that I thought deserved to win, deserved in quotation marks. So I never placed a huge amount of faith in that. And I didn't really have a lot of faith to lose, especially since I know that actually from the beginning, the Oscars, it was the studios that were lobbying. And, you know, essentially MGM could say to Clark Gable and everybody on their roster, okay, you have to vote for this movie for Best Picture so it wins. So it's kind of baked into it.
That was Chris Hewitt, the film and theater critic for the Star Tribune, as well as Sonia Rao, a pop culture reporter for the Washington Post. NPR news host Angela Davis talked with the two of them last year about some of the politics behind the Academy Awards. So right now we're talking about movies, and we want you, our listeners, to join the conversation. Tell us, what is your favorite movie of the past year? Has it gotten recognition from award shows, or has it mostly been overlooked? The phone lines are open. You can call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. And Mina in Minneapolis is on the line. Mina, what would you like to say? What was one of your favorite movies of the past year?
Well, I really liked Catherine Called Birdie, which was directed by Lena Dunham, who, you know, has done many quirky things in TV and film for us. And Catherine Called Birdie is loosely based on a children's novel by Karen Cushman. And it's a medieval comedy about a 14-year-old girl avoiding marriage.
Yes.
To save the family farm, basically, or family finances. They're lords. They have titles, but dad is really broke. So he realizes at age 14, he does have a resource in Catherine. So much of the story is about how it's a coming of age story, but it's also her, you know, realizing in the end she's going to get married, but she wants to do it on her own terms. So it has pretty high production values. It's a nice movie to look at visually. And the lead actress is Bella Ramsey, who I've not seen before, but, you know, she's great in this role of kind of a childlike, devious girl trying to avoid a fate that, you know, it's going to happen, but she learns how to maybe more accept it in the end. But, you know, it's just a great, fun movie to watch.
Yeah, I watched this movie when it came out, and I also really, really loved it. Catherine Called Birdie. Mina, thank you so much. Sean is also on the line from Bemidji. Sean, what was your favorite movie of the past year?
Hello. My favorite was The Banshees of Inisherin. And I had such a hard time finding that movie while it was in the theaters, and was so antsy for it to come out on a streaming channel. But I found it really delightful, quirky. The dark humor was wonderful. The one I was really, what was a major disappointment to me was Avatar, The Way of Water. I wanted to love it. I felt like they added so much military action and bigotry and, you know, like they were trying so hard to appeal to the action movie audience. Had some beautiful underwater sequences, but overall I was disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much, Sean. And Jaylon is on the line from St. Louis Park. Jaylon, what did you see and what? Tell us about it.
Yes. Oh, man. I definitely have to say Wakanda Forever has been just, for me, the talk of this 2022. It was, from myself, I think it was the most anticipated movie. And I also think it was, even though it got its awards, it was still a little snug. You know, I think it could have got more recognition, you know, not just because of Chadwick Boseman, but because of Chadwick Boseman, he left behind a legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely one of my top movies. The beauty of woman empowerment, and that, you know, women can be kings too.
Yeah, Jaylon, thank you. So Aaron and I both saw this movie as well, and I really loved it too. Angela Bassett is nominated for Best Supporting Actress for an Oscar for her role in that. And I believe she won a Golden Globe for that role as well. Aaron, your thoughts on Wakanda Forever, the sequel to Black Panther?
Honestly, I thought it was incredible. The only, I think, disagreement that you and I had about this movie was that I actually thought this one was better than the first one. I think Angela Bassett and Letitia Wright did an incredible job in it. I think part of the idea that it got snubbed, and like it's the fact that it didn't get as much recognition from the Academy that other as much as people would have liked, is mainly probably have to do with the fact that it's like a Marvel film. We touched on how like the Academy is a little pretentious, a little hoity-toity, but getting back to this film, it was a great ride, and it was a touching tribute that made sense both emotionally and canonically in the story. It was very well done.
Yeah, one of the things that I loved about this movie that Aaron, you and I talked about when it first came out was it's a blockbuster, it's a Marvel movie, but it tells this really complicated an emotional and nuanced story about grief, which I think, again, touches on what you and brought up at the beginning of our conversation, that so many of the movies that were really impactful this year are about loss and loneliness and kind of the struggles that we're having with our mental health. And I think this movie was such an example of touching on those themes in a way that was, it felt true to the characters, it felt true to the original, but also I think really kind of hit different in this time that we're living in after we've been through so much over the past few years and after the death of Chadwick Boseman, the original Black Panther.
I went to see the movie actually several weeks after it opened.
Oh, that's right.
And had really, it was a really different kind of an experience because there is such a different balance going on through the film. We have, of course, it's a Marvel movie. There are huge action sequences where things are getting blown up and whatever. And then there are these deeply emotional moments about grief, about mourning. And so I'm sitting there, and during the periods where it was, where they were dealing with the grief, people in the audience would start talking.
And
it was just kind of,
that's very
rich. but the great kind of moment was I was finally, it quieted down and it was just so quiet, and then suddenly I hear this and it literally was someone who had fallen asleep
there,
and
that makes me so sad.
That makes me so angry. No,
we go to movies for different things.
That's right.
And I mean, I would have argued that probably Wakanda Forever would have benefited for a little less action. But obviously, I was in the minority. Sure. In that. Yeah. But you know, we each take something different from every movie.
Yeah. This film gave us so much, but it was such a step outside from what we would expect from a standard action film. I don't think I've ever watched an action film that was dedicated to mourning and how, like, pain can take you to so many extreme places.
Yeah. Well, I loved that movie, and it's too bad that someone fell asleep in the theater.
No, it was a first for me. That, I mean, I'm sure I've been in places, I've been in movies where people have fallen asleep, but never snored quite so loud.
Sure.
So I want to talk a little bit more about some of the other movies that really stood out to us. A couple of the movies that were nominated for Best Actor for the Academy Awards this year. So you saw the two films whose actors are considered front runners, or two of the front runners in this race. The Whale, which is starring Brendan Fraser, and After Sun, which is starring Paul Mescal. I have not seen either one of these movies yet, so I'm excited for you to tell us about them.
No.
Start off by telling us about The Whale.
The Whale is the Brendan Fraser stars. Brendan Fraser stars in this Darren Aronofsky film, and of course Aronofsky made The Wrestler, he made Black Swan, he made Mother, a whole bunch of, and that kind of indicates what this movie is. it is kind of, it's horrifying. I mean, and it makes you feel really uncomfortable. It's based on a play which kind of, and it is set out in happening basically pretty much in this one room in this guy's house in Idaho. And Charlie is an online educator who has suffered a huge loss in his life, and that has, as a result, he has developed an eating disorder, which has resulted in him becoming so enormous that he is facing death, basically. Mm. And it is a really claustrophobic, thought-provoking film about the meaning of life, the meaning of love, relationships, and also, you know, I mean, Brendan Fraser plays Charlie with this incredible pathos, but also there's a certain cluelessness about Charlie because he is perhaps too trusting of people, even though he does see himself as a man of the world. And it's really engaging. Mm. So, but it's a hard watch too, it has to be said. Another hard watch, and also, I mean, a lot of The Whale is about Charlie's relationship with his daughter. And another father-daughter movie is After Sun, which I think a lot of people have never really heard about.
Mm-hmm. The one starring Paul Mescal, who's also nominated for Best Actor for this movie.
And it's about a father and a daughter who are on vacation and at a very nice resort in the sun. They are from, they're from Scotland. I wonder why I was interested in that. Oh. Anyway, but this is an amazing puzzle of a movie because very little is actually explained about what is going on, other than you have a sense that there is something ominous on the horizon. And the Charlotte Wells wrote and directed this, and it's a semi-autobiographical movie about her own experiences with her father. And it is, Paul Mescal is just amazing as Callum. And Frankie Corio as Sophie, the girl. It's it doesn't move very fast. There's no action in it. It's but it is just riveting.
And you actually picked out a clip from this movie that you want to share from us. And before we play it, tell us what we need to know about what's happening in this scene.
This is basically, it's mainly Frankie, the Corio as Sophie, talking to her father about just spending time together.
Let's hear that clip. This is from the movie After Sun.
I think it's nice that we share the same sky.
What do you mean?
Well, like, sometimes at playtime, I look up to the sky, and if I can see the sun, then I think about the fact that we can both see the sun, so even though we're not actually in the same place and we're not actually together, we kind of are in a way, you know? Like, we're both underneath the same sky, so kind of together.
And there we have it. Everything, everywhere, all at once. It's just an amazing film. And you know, there are certain movies that will stick with you, and certain movies that, you know, will come back up. They don't get a lot of attention at the time, but people say this was one of the best movies I've ever seen. This is the kind of movie that ends up on those lists.
Oh, I can't wait to watch it. So while we're talking about movies, we want you to join the conversation. Tell us about your favorite movie of the past year. Has it gotten recognition from award shows, or has it mostly been snubbed? Either way, tell us what you loved about it. The phone lines are open. You can call us at 651-227-6000. And Katie is on the line in Edina. Katie, tell us about your favorite movie of the past year.
Hi, I loved Causeway with Jennifer Lawrence, and I haven't heard if she's gotten any recognition for that. It was so good, and it's about a soldier returning from the Middle East with traumatic brain injury and kind of her adjustment to life and the friendship she develops. Has that gotten any?
Yes, so that one is nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Brian Tyree Henry, who was, I believe he plays Jennifer Lawrence's friend in that movie. I have not seen this movie yet, but it's on my list because I am a big fan of Brian Tyree Henry.
This was a
He's great, and she is so good, too. I mean, that movie really stuck with me, so yeah. I highly recommend it.
Thank you, Katie. And Brian Tyree Henry is an actor that Aaron and I really love because he is in the series Atlanta, which just ended this year.
Yeah, we both really loved him. And I think the main reason that we haven't heard enough about this film is because it's on Apple TV Plus, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a newer streaming service. It's still people are still having a hard time seeing everything on there. So that's probably why.
Yeah. I want to talk about one of my favorite movies that is on a streaming service. And I think it should have gotten a lot more recognition because it's one of my favorite movies of the past year. It is RRR. It has one nomination from the Academy Awards this year for Best Original Song. But I watched this a few weeks ago and I've just been like obsessed. I can't stop talking about it. I can't stop telling people you have to watch this movie. So again, speaking of big overstuffed movies, this is a 3-hour long movie. It's an epic about these two men in colonial India. They're both revolutionaries and they strike up this friendship. And this movie is just, it's incredible. It is, I feel like for me, when I think about movie magic and what movies can do, I think that this movie is a great example of it. It has these like sweeping dance numbers. It has like these gorgeous like montages about these two guys becoming friends, these like over the top wild action sequences. But it's also really brutal when it comes to depicting life under colonization. So this is a movie that I was just like, everyone should watch this movie. We need to talk about it all the time. I think it's one of the best examples, again, of how to do a big sprawling movie right.
You use that term, though, which I think scares a lot of people. 3 hours.
3 hours.
There are a lot of movies that, frankly, I flinch a little when I see the running time. And I think that's becoming a problem.
It's becoming more common. You're correct. I remember telling the joke earlier in 2022 about the Batman being an eighth of the day because it's 3 hours long. And then as the year progressed, I kept seeing it happen more and more in films. Most notably, in Avatar, The Way of Water. That was a massively long film that a lot of us had to, like, sit through.
You mean you had to sit through?
Yeah, that's right. If I remember correctly, I said, I'm going to watch the new Avatar film. And you went, thank gosh, because I don't want to watch that.
Yeah, I was like, thank you for doing it so I don't have to. Yeah.
I was talking to my sister the other day. She had just gone to see Babylon, which I know... you really detested, Samantha.
Sam used the word hate three times in her review for that movie.
I did not like it. You mentioned
how much you disliked it a week after your initial review of it.
I'm still talking about it, you guys. In my personal life, I'm like, have you seen Babylon? It's bad, don't.
But anyway, my sister said she saw five times when the movie should have ended. And she was watching with her friends. I mean, they were literally kind of gathering their bags and coats and stuff, and then it went on five times.
Yeah, I kind of felt that way after like the first scene. So but I really want to convince you guys, you got to watch RRR. Okay. And so here I'm going to give you a pitch in the form of a song. So original song is what RRR is nominated for at the Oscars, the song Not to, and I want to play you some of the song to try to convince you got to watch this movie. This is Not to from RRR.
Not salsa, not flamenco, my brother.
Do you know Natu?
What is Natu?
Polam gattu dummulo na potla gitta dookinattu polera majataralo pota rajuginattu kirru seppulesukoni karra samu chesinattu marri sattu needalona kurra gumpu koodinattu erra jonna rottelo na nilapadukku galivinattu na paata soodu Natu 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 Veera Natu 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 Veera Natu 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 Pachchi Mirapalaga Janatu Natu 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 Vichu Kattilaga Verri Natu.
That is the song Natu Natu from the movie RRR, a movie that I really loved. And we have a caller in Minneapolis, Jyothi, who wants to talk about this movie RRR as well. Jyothi, what would you like to say about this movie?
Oh, I'd like to just say that I really enjoyed watching it. I think it was full of like fun and sort of a ridiculous nature that made you laugh at things. But it also really touched on how tragic some of the oppression that you know, India had to suffer under the British. And it's actually, Vishakhapatnam is one of my family's hometown. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of fun to see, you know, and yeah, so that's, yeah, I think it was a good way to, I don't know, somewhat lightheartedly look at what went down, especially in this time when we've been sort of like talking a lot about how great the royal family was with the passing of the queen, that there's a really different perspective out there. And it was good to see that brought forth. So that's it.
Yeah, thank you, Jyothi. That is Jyothi talking about the movie RRR, which you can watch on Netflix. And I just highly, highly, highly recommend it. So speaking of streaming, as we talked about earlier in the hour, viewership for the Academy Awards is struggling. Last year was the second lowest on record. The year before, they had the lowest viewership ever. This decline has been happening for years. And so because of struggles with viewership, some award shows are trying something new starting in 2024. The SAG Awards are going to be streamed live on Netflix. And this month, the SAG Awards will be streamed on Netflix's YouTube channel. That's on February 26th. So, Ewan, I want to ask you, you've been covering arts for a long time. What do you think of this? Do you think that streaming could be the future of award shows?
Anything is possible. I mean, I think the problem with the award shows quite often is they're just kind of bad. I mean, there's because they always run long, and the a lot of the speeches are inane, and then some of the dance numbers are, you're thinking, what? Yes, it's a wonderful big production number there, but really, what has this got to do with the movies? I want to hear about the movies, and so yeah, it's again, like 3 hours, or it's too much.
So we have just a little bit of time left. And before the show ends, I want to ask both of you, if you had one wish for the award season this year, not counting like renominating movies like Nope or The Woman King that were snubbed, what do you want to see? What's your one wish if you could just make anything happen, Aaron?
Oh, if I had one wish for this award season, it would be that just an incredible, just I'm imagining the incredible moment of just Michelle Yeoh, like winning, and me just feeling so good for her and her delivering this monumental like speech. And I just want that moment. I just want that perfect 5 minutes to exist on YouTube so we can watch it over and over and over again.
Yes, Michelle Yeoh nominated for Best Actress in Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'm also rooting for this. She would be the first Asian woman to ever win a Best Actress award, and only the second woman of color, the second non-white woman after Halle Berry in 2002. Ewan, real quick, what do you wish?
Pretty much the same, except that I would hope that Tar and Women Talking, which are both extraordinarily powerful movies in different ways, that they get a lot of recognition and it chases people to see them. I mean, they're just extraordinary. Life-changing.
Yes, so many great movies we got to watch this year. Our time is up for today, but you can join us again tomorrow morning at 9. Thank you so much, everyone. Be safe.
Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder that if you want to catch my show in real time, tune in and call in weekdays at 9 a.m.